episode of NC Fro is Reading. I am your host, Felicia Baxter. I'm recording my podcast from my beautiful but way out of the way home here in Fayetteville, North Carolina. It's another dreary day. They're calling for several inches of rain. And imagine that. I actually am getting ready to go to a book fair in Raleigh. I don't know how many people would call what I do on a daily basis either caught in a rut or routine, because I like routine. I like doing things that make me feel good, and going to book fairs really make me feel good. And I find it more entertaining, you know, than just sitting around by myself. I can actually find a book and escape. I think book club and my podcast, that is the reason why I started both of those, because for an escape or to be entertained, but I'm also learning something. And every time I think I'm expanding my mind, I'm getting knowledge that I'm going to be able to apply to somewhere else. Also, I've actually just bought really cool recording equipment that I can actually truly be mobile and take this on the road. I've attached a microphone boom to a wooden crate that I bought at Walmart. I can actually just fold it back up, stick it in the back of my truck, and keep it moving. I'm not going to do that today because my intent is to do two things. I like spending Saturdays. If you have to work, or you have to do like the chores of the week because you can't do them in freaking Ashland, Kentucky, it's great to be able to do it here at home. I got up and I'm almost finished doing laundry. I am preparing some of the meal kits in my next work of fiction, or nonfiction, to say the least. And just finished, completed that, and I'm worse than the Army. I do more before 10 o'clock than most people do all day. But this was in prep because I know I'm also going to have to hit it tomorrow morning and head to Tennessee. I'll be working Monday, and then I'll be at a leadership conference. So there's a lot of stuff that I actually have to pack into a very short period of time, because most of it is going to be spent on the road. I'm also looking at my record player, and one of the things that I kept thinking about this past week was how much I miss my vinyl. I started a collection within the past year while I was, actually 2 years, while I was born in Oregon, and then again I continued it when I got to Greenville. And I just realized that I have a great old school record player, but I never get the opportunity to play it. I'm staying with a friend of mine in Tennessee, and I have a good idea of a great place that this record player could set. And when I get home in the evening, I would actually have the opportunity to just do my hair and listen to old records. So I'm going to figure out a way. I actually know it can't fit in the back of my truck, and I'm going to take it back with me when I go back on the road, before I get back on the road tomorrow. But the purpose of this was like some of my things, what I like to do in my webcast is just to kind of talk about what's going on with me, some truths, and what my daily truth is, and just to remark on some of the things of the day. What's going on in the news right now is this whole nonsense with Jussie Smollett. Jussie Smollett is a character from Empire. He is an openly gay African-American man. About a month or so ago, he was supposedly accosted and attacked for being gay. And also they shouted out, "Make America Great Again," blah, blah, blah. Come to find out, dude was actually, it was staged, and it was because of his protesting his low pay. I remember War of the Worlds. I remember an episode of Lucy and Ethel when they, a publicity stunt on the level of War of the Worlds. And this had that kind of feeling. I thought he was actually doing this to protest, truly to protest his treatment just being an African-American man in America and on top of that being gay. But he did it just to protest his low pay. Well, now he went from low pay to no pay. They actually fired his butt from Empire. There was a way he could have actually protested. He did not have to use hundreds of man hours to call attention to this nonsense. And now he's on the hook for that and he ain't got no job. Very sad. So he actually gets the Donkey of the Day award. So whatever, dude, I feel bad that you thought you had to go to those lengths in order to protest or to get a raise. Just ask Lee Daniel. He's cheap. We all know he's cheap. He only paid, you know, Monique $50,000 for her Oscar level performance in Precious a few years ago when she's still ticked off about that. This episode is going to be a continuation in celebration of Black History Month again. I'm actually reading, my last book fair I went to, I bought a book called Calling the Wind. It is a collection of African-American short stories. My previous podcast, I showcased, imagine that, a closeted African-American man. I don't know if he was still closeted in 1958, but he was definitely ticked off. And now I'm going to read, I would like to read for you, Who's Passing for Who? Langston Hughes, 1952. I'm not sure of his sexual persuasion, but this is hysterical. And I think it's apropos for what's going on now and how he and his uppity friends actually got played. Because even now, almost over 50 years later, after this short story was actually released, we're still wrestling with issues of color and gender and race. I look at how long it took us to actually get Black History Month, how long it has taken us to actually get a holiday to celebrate one of the greatest orators and actually a great writer in his own right, Martin Luther King, get a celebration of his birthday or a national or a federal holiday, which is not consistently celebrated in corporate America, even in 2019. So I think this short story is a testament and applicable even in this time. And now I would like to read for you, Who's Passing for Who? Langston Hughes, 1952. One of the great difficulties about being a member of a minority race is that so many kind-hearted, well-meaning boors gather around to help, usually to tell the truth they have nothing to help with, except their company, which is often appallingly dull. Some members of the Negro race seem very well able to put up with it, though in these uplifting years. Such as Caleb Johnson, colored social worker, who was always dragging around with him some nondescript white person or two, inviting them to dinner, showing them Harlem, ending up at the Savoy, much to the displeasure of whatever friends of his might be out that evening for fun, not sociology. His woke friends, as we would call it today. Friends are friends, and unfortunately, over-earnest uplifters are uplifters, no matter what color they may be. If it were the white race, that was ground down instead of Negroes, Caleb Johnson would be one of the first to offer Nordics the sympathy of his utterly inane society. Under the impression that somehow he would be doing them a great deal of good. You see, Caleb and his black friends, too, were all Boers, or so we who lived in Harlem's literary bohemia during the Negro Renaissance thought. We literary ones considered ourselves too broad-minded to be bothered with questions of color. We liked people of any race who smoked incessantly, drank liberally, wore complexion and morality. as loose garments and made fun of anyone who didn't do likewise. We snubbed and high-hatted any Negro or white luckless enough not to understand Gertrude Stein, Ulysses, Man Ray, the Thurman, Jean Toomer, or George Andrew. By the end of the 1920s, Caleb was just catching up to Dos Passos. He thought H.G. Wells good. We met Caleb one night in Smalls. He had three assorted white folks in tow. We would have passed him by with but a nod had he not hailed us enthusiastically, risen and introduced us with great acclaim to his friends, who turned out to be schoolteachers from Iowa, a woman and two men. They appeared amazed and delighted to meet all of us at once, two Negro writers and a black painter in the flesh. They invited us to have a drink with them. Money being scarce with us, we deigned to sit down at their table. The white lady said, "I've never met a Negro writer before." The two men added, "Neither have we." "Why, we know any number of white writers," we three dark bohemians declared with bored nonchalance. "But Negro writers are much more rare," said the lady. "There are plenty in Harlem," we said. "But not in Iowa," said one of the men. "There are no good white writers in Iowa either, are there?" we asked superciliously. "Oh yes, Ruth Succo came from there." Whereupon we proceeded to light in upon Ruth Succo as old hat and to annihilate her in favor of Kay Boyle. The way we flung names around seemed to impress both Caleb and his white guests. This, of course, delighted us, though we were too young and too proud to admit it. The drinks came and everything was going well, all of us drinking and we three showing off in a highbrow manner. When suddenly, at the table just behind us, a man got up and knocked down a woman. He was a brown-skinned man. The woman was blonde. As she rose, he knocked her down again. Then the red-haired man from Iowa got up and knocked the colored man down. He said, "Keep your hands off that white woman." The man got up and said, "She's not a white woman. She's my wife." One of the waiters added, "She's not white, sir. She's colored." Whereupon the man from Iowa looked puzzled, dropped his fist, and said, "I'm sorry." The colored man said, "What are you doing up here in Harlem anyway? Interfering with my family affairs." The white man said, "I thought she was a white woman." The woman who had been on the floor rose and said, "Well, I'm not a white woman, I'm colored, and you leave my husband alone." Then they both lit in on the gentleman from Iowa. It took all of us and the several waiters too to separate them. When it was over, the manager requested us to kindly pay our bill and get out. He said we were disturbing the peace, so we all left. We went to a fish restaurant down the street. Caleb was terribly apologetic to his white friends. We artists were both mad and amused. "Why did you say you were sorry?" said the colored painter to the visitor from Iowa. "Aren't you, after you hit the man and then you found out It wasn't a white woman you were defending, but merely a light-colored woman who looked white. Well, answered the redhead Iowan, I didn't mean to be buttoned in if they were all of the same race. Don't you think a woman needs defending from a brute, no matter what race she may be? Asked the painter. Yes, but I think it's up to you to defend your own women. Oh, so you divide up a brawl according to races, no matter who was right? Well, I wouldn't say that. You mean you wouldn't defend a colored woman whose husband was knocking her down? Asked the poet. Before the visitor had time to answer, the painter said, No, you just got mad because you thought a black man was hitting a white woman. But she looked like a white woman, countered the man. Maybe she was just passing for colored, I said. Like some Negroes pass for white, Caleb interposed. Anyhow, I don't like it, said the colored painter, the way you stopped defending her when you found out she wasn't white. No, we don't like it, we all agreed except Caleb. Caleb said in extenuation, But Mr. Stubblefield is new to Harlem, the red-haired white man said, Yes, it's my first time here. Maybe Mr. Stubblefield ought to stay out of Harlem, we observed. I agree, Mr. Stubblefield said. Good night. He got up and then and there and left the cafe. He stalked as he walked. His red head disappeared into the night. Ah, that's too bad, said the white couple who remained. Stubby's temper just got the best of him. But explain to us, are many colored folks really as fair as that woman? Sure. Lots of them have more white blood than colored and pass for white. Do they? Said the lady and gentleman from Iowa. You never read Nella Larson, we asked. She writes novels, Caleb explained. She's part white herself. Read her, we advise. Also read the autobiography of ex-colored man, of an ex-colored man. Not that we have read it ourselves, because we paid little attention to the older colored writers, but we knew it was about passing for white. We all ordered fish and settled down comfortably to shocking our white friends with tales about how many Negroes there were passing for white all over America. We were determined to épater la bougie real good via these white couple we had cornered when the woman leaned over the table in midst of our dissertations and said, Listen, gentlemen, you needn't spread the word, but me and my husband aren't white either. We're just passing for white for the last 15 years. What? We're colored too, just like you, said the husband, but it's better passing for white because we make more money. Well, that took the wind out of us. It took the wind out of Caleb too. He thought all the time he was showing some fine white folks Harlem, and they were as colored as he was. Caleb almost never cursed, but this time he said, I'll be damned. Then everyone laughed and laughed. We almost had hysterics. All at once, we dropped our professionally self-conscious Negro manners, became natural, ate fish, and talked and kidded freely like colored folks do when there are no white folks around. We really had fun then, joking about that the red-haired guy who mistook a fair colored woman for white. After the fish, we went to two or three more night spots and drank until about 5 o'clock in the morning. Finally, we put the light-colored people in a taxi, headed downtown. They turned to shout a last goodbye. The cab was just about to move off when the woman called to the driver to stop. She leaned out the window and said with a grin, Listen, boys, I hate to confuse you again. But to tell you the truth, my husband and I aren't really colored at all. We're white. We just thought we'd kid you by passing for colored a little while. Just as you said, Negroes sometimes pass for white. She laughed as they sped off toward Central Park, waving goodbye. We didn't say a thing. We just stood there on the corner in Harlem, dumbfounded, not knowing which way we'd been fooled. Were they really white passing for colored or colored passing for white? Whatever race they were, they had had too much fun at our expense, even if they had paid for the drinks. I don't know. I think it was more that they got played or the ruse of who was passing for whom and who actually did it well. It does point to a couple of things, I believe. No one wants to get played, but it also speaks to how easy it is for people to move from one situation to another, from one social strata to another, with ease and without regard to how it could possibly hurt other people, and how people do things thoughtlessly. And I'm wondering if that couple went to their grave knowing that this young black writer who had been played by them had been so affected that he actually wrote a short story. I'm glad they did not use names to actually point out who this nondescript couple were, but it just goes to tell how things that could be, or some people could think to be, so inconsequential that it actually does have such a great effect, and it can be devastating at times. So this was actually a very good reading. I hope you will enjoy it. I hope you are going to, or you will enjoy it. I definitely did. I think my next posting will be with the Alice Walker tale, and then I will be wrapping up my celebration of Black History Month as it refers to Black literature. Unless I find some real good findings or some really good writings during the book fair today in Raleigh. This is NC Fro signing off, and I hope you guys have a safe and dry day.